Hello, everybody, and welcome to Games with Garfield, the podcast on the Three Donkeys website. I'm your fabulous host, Tyler Buhlman, alongside Scaff Elias.
Hello.
And Mr. Richard Garfield.
Here again.
And we've decided that we're not going to do the news segment.
Well, this week, because we just don't have stuff that's interesting.
Oh, but we're going to get back to it? I was thinking we could take a moment of silence for the news segment and put it to rest, put it to bed.
Well, I think at some point there'll be something interesting that we have something interesting to say about it.
All right.
It's a good launching place.
Right? You know, we really should talk about these podcasts before we do them.
I don't think that's something we need more of.
Okay, so we wanted to talk a little bit about casual games. Casual games is a huge growing segment. It's people talk about it in the news. There's lots of casual game companies springing up, especially in Seattle. And you guys have had some work in...
Just to be clear, casual games, I think it's a growing segment maybe in the computer industry or in terms of the press it gets. But it's not really clear that people are playing more casual games than they used to. In fact, my guess would be less as a percentage of their time.
Well, I think that's counter to the popular conception of casual games. So why don't you elaborate on what do you mean by the casual game category by your definition?
Well, when people talk about it, if you read it in the news, they're talking about computer casual games or electronic casual games. And that is, we like to have a broader focus on all sorts of different types of games. And so, you know, are people playing less Wahoo and Monopoly than they were, you know, as a percentage of their free time in 1954? I mean, I guess my tendency would be to doubt it.
So you want to talk about casual games in this larger way?
Well, do you just want to talk about it in terms of computer games? Because people talk about the casual, it's strange how implicit when people talk about games, computers is in that statement. And I fell right into that trap.
Yeah. So, but when you talk about casual games, the way we like to think of it, what makes a game a casual game, I think is very, it's a very tricky topic, and a lot of people may define it in different ways. But one sort of hallmark of almost any casual game that you would find is that it has a fair degree of randomness in it. We should say indeterminacy, and that leads us to talking about randomness and indeterminacy in games, like as the basis for talking about casual games.
Actually, before we get to that, I would like to mention that Scaff's question about Monopoly in 1954. I was just on a cruise, in fact, and the cruise. I think I was traveling in 1954 because the average age of the people on the cruise was literally might have been in the 70s, and it was a really pleasant cruise in many ways. But you go into the game room and it was filled with people playing cards. I mean, they were playing just Mahjong. They were playing cards. They were playing party games, and it was something that they occupied their time with, and it's I think it's some a mark of sort of a generation which is has passed, and we're in a different space now.
Well, actually, we took a trip to Vegas,
Were people playing cards in Vegas?
It was amazing. Were people playing cards everywhere?
That's unbelievable.
On the plane, we pulled out our DSs, and we spent most of the time playing the card house, the DS cart, playing pitch and playing, these types of games on the plane. So, you know, I'm just saying, you took a cruise, old people playing cards. I took a plane with young people to Vegas, young, vibrant people.
And they were playing Euchre on Game Boy.
Exactly. So what comes around goes around.
Yeah. Yeah. So people a lot of times don't understand how much games in general are reliant upon randomness, and you often can ask people, you know, name a game without randomness in it. And
chess.
Yeah. And of course there's actually quite a bit of randomness in chess.
What? Yeah. Well, tell me, Richard and Scaff, tell me more.
Sometimes people find uncertainty easier to swallow than randomness, but it really amounts to the same thing. If a game's outcome is determined, then there's no randomness. There's no uncertainty. But if you can't tell, if you don't know who's going to win, if you don't know how it's going to go, then there's randomness involved.
So for the easiest way to see that there's randomness in chess is pretend that you, let's say I just sit down and I make completely random moves. Can I beat the best chess player in the world? And it's pretty obvious that I can, as long as those random moves are correct. Richard one time figured out how likely it was to...
for me to beat Kasparov.
Yeah.
And I guessed that it was... my calculations were that I could beat Kasparov moving randomly, but my chances were something like the same as winning the New York State Lottery 7 times consecutively. So
he can't take one off.
It's got to be consecutive.
It's got to be 7 times in a row. That's sort of one the proof that there is randomness, but really when you look at the outcomes of matches, it turns out that the results are generally best described if you attribute some randomness in player performance. That's how the entire chess rating system works.
Can you explain that in a little more detail?
Not really quickly over a podcast, but you can go to Wikipedia and look up the ELO rating system, and they use a modification of that these days. But I'm
just going to step out. Is that?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Anyway, the point is that the your most accurate way of predicting the outcome on these supposed things without randomness is to assume some underlying randomness in player performances, let's give it. There's a great example game that we can give, which sort of makes it immediately obvious that something in humans' ability to calculate these really complex situations is going to lead to randomness. If I say here, let's play a game, and I pick a digit of pi, a random very high digit of pi. Let's say Tyler guessed the 1 billionth digit of pi.
I'll play that game with you. I'm going to guess.
Whoever's closest wins.
7. No, not closest.
Oh, you've got to get it.
You got to get it.
Okay.
I'll guess 7.
Tyler, what's your guess?
I feel like this is a fix. I feel like you and Richard have colluded. Well, I'm going to say 6.
Yeah, okay. And then you can just go figure out.
We have to go figure it out.
On your own
now.
Time, you can go figure out who won.
But the point is that this game, that game was just as deterministic as chess. But was there chance involved?
Yes.
Obviously, right? Because we just guessed. I mean, it's a much worse game than chess because we don't have all those. It's a lot less fun to think about.
Would you have called that a game? What we just did?
Well, sure. We flipped coins. That's a game. I mean, we just pick a number between 1 and 7. Guess what I'm guessing? That's a game. It's not a very interesting one. But this is a game. That's a game which is highly, highly complex if you look at it the correct way. But it's trivial if you play it the way we did, right? And chess is very similar. If you play it just shoving your pieces around randomly, it's not that complicated game. You're just performing an algorithm. If you watch my kids play chess. Well, this used to be the case. It's no longer the case. But when I watched my kids play chess, it was random. It was like you watched it, and it was like, oh, that. If Terry gets lucky and moves the rook, she'll see she can capture that bishop, which is not. You know, it was like random moves, and they were making random moves. And I'm sure if Kasparov watched me play, it would be exactly the same thing. He'd be watching me, like pulling his hair out at moves I was missing, or well, I probably wouldn't.
It's like trying to find something in a fog. You know, you're walking around, and you're taking a random walk. And if you get close enough to something, then you can take those extra 5 or 10 steps and touch it and you win. And there's this random walk part going on in the beginning before you get to the point where you can give yourself some direction. In principle, if you watch kids play tic-tac-toe, it's very, very similar. Tic-tac-toe is just a simpler version of chess. If you and I play tic-tac-toe, well, if Richard and I play tic-tac-toe, there's no randomness in that because the outcome's predetermined because we both can see the entire move tree.
Right.
And if someone ever can see the entire move tree in chess, then there'd be no more randomness in chess, at least for that person. Which brings up the point that when you talk about the amount of randomness in a game, you really need to think about how the game interacts with the audience that's playing it. tic-tac-toe can be random for some people and not for others.
I see. So we're back to sort of we're talking about why randomness is important in casual games, right? We're talking about an audience here.
Right. So every game is going to have, if it's a game, there's some indeterminacy in the outcome, or else, you know, why would you bother playing it? So every game has some indeterminacy in it, and how much indeterminacy is there in the game? And a lot of you'll hear, unfortunately, you'll hear, I think, a lot of people say that game's too random, or I hate games with randomness in them. And I think what they're really trying to say is they might hate the overt randomness in a game that occurs from a die roll or something like that. But the amount of randomness in a game, the optimal amount of randomness really needs to be matched to the audience that you want to play the game. Because randomness does some very good things as well as potentially some bad things for your game.
Yeah, one of the first things I look at a game when I'm deciding whether it's one I want to play is where the randomness is coming in. Because I know that unless there's a lot of a reasonable amount of randomness in it, it's just going to be a calculation fest most of the time.
Right. What you don't want to do is play a game, you know, 20 times as complicated as tic-tac-toe, where I know that after a certain amount of plays, if I put the proper amount of work into it, I'm going to figure it out. And someone may already have put that amount of work into it, and I feel almost obligated to put that amount of work into it. And if I can see that eventually there will be no randomness in the game, that makes it much less interesting for me to play long term, as opposed to a game where maybe there's a die roll in there, so I know that the indeterminacy and outcome will be maintained over a much longer lifetime, depending upon how well they can play it. If the game's too complex for human minds, there's going to be randomness generated, you know,
like our pie game,
right?
Yeah, that was right.
By the random number generator inside your head, not to get too much into, neurobiology or maybe even physics or metaphysics, there's a general assumption that when we interact with something far too complicated for us to understand, that the result is random.
A lot of game professionals some people who play games very seriously react very negatively to luck in games, And I think as Gav said, it's a reaction somehow to this overt luck, but not to the indeterminacy itself, because otherwise, a game is like tic-tac-toe. And one of the questions you have to ask yourself why there is this reaction. There's clearly, I think a lot of, well, we're at an interesting time in history in game design history, and that historically games really weren't very designed. They were much more evolved. The audience that played them evolved them, right? So the last few decades have been the first where you've actually had people designing games professionally and selling them, and communities of game designers getting together. And so those people really have to look at themselves and look at their tastes and preferences and understand that they may not be representative of the audience at large. They may have different tastes, and I think part of the thing is they tend to be part of the gaming elite, and games with less luck tend to showcase your elite skills at a game better.
Right.
So it seems to make sense then that you would think that the gaming elite, the high priests of games, the designers of games, would tend to look down on luck because it's not showcasing what makes their experience.
Right. You do hear the complaint that the game doesn't have enough skill testing, which is sort of is popularly the opposite of luck, is what how it's used.
Right, and that's well and fine. But one, you know, if you're looking for a game that's really a measure that's going to finally differentiate two people from each other relatively rapidly, then you probably don't want that much indeterminacy in a game. That much overt randomness in a game leading to indeterminacy. One thing that happens, one of the really good things about randomness is that two people whose, say, true skill levels at the game are relatively widely apart can play the game with each other probably a lot over time, but for sure several plays in a row without it becoming boring for them.
So you're talking about a new player and a veteran player.
Let's not use new and veteran, but good and bad. It widens the skill range of two people that can possibly be playing the game. Maybe if we took 10,000 measurements, it would be seen that, you know, whatever, you're 10% better than me at such and such a game. But with four or five measurements, maybe that's unknown. Or maybe after four or five measurements, you appear to be winning, you know, two times for every one of mine. But it's still interesting because we still don't know who's going to play or who's going to win when we play. And so what that does is it actually increases the amount of the size of the audience that can play with each other. Now, for a game that's not that doesn't have a really, really large amount of players at your fingertips, that is critical. Because, say, for instance, for a family game, right? You want to sit down and the four of you want to play a game because, you know, that's the perfect American family size. You sit there and you want to play a game. It's critical that there's randomness, enough randomness in that game that for the average family, you won't get the same ordering of results every time. And if you look back, you know, a lot of games that are popular for families fit that mold because your playing audience is pretty small. And the same thing with party games, very, very, very similar, where the amount of people you get to play with at once, your possible global play group just isn't big enough to play a super skill testing game than a couple times in a row.
And even though it's critical also for small groups because it makes it so that a broader audience can play them, it's certainly not bad for games with a large audience to have it. I mean, you look at a game like poker. Poker has a lot of variation in it. An expert can lose to a duffer. They can't they're not going to lose for long. But any given hand, and in fact, a particular tournament with few enough people, the beginner can win. Yet, there's a huge amount of skill, and there's a huge audience for this game. I don't think it works against it that it has such breadth. I'd written an article in Computer Game Developers magazine on luck, and it sort of hit on the big issues we talk about in our class and that we just talked about here, and. Shortly after this article came out, Chris Green, who was working with Valve on Team Fortress 2, they really liked the tone of the article. And even though I cautioned in the article that adding luck to an existing genre of game is a difficult thing because you alienate your audience who expect a certain level of luck, they secretly put in critical hits. Sort of a swingy critical hit system. And he said that over the next couple weeks, people just had a blast with the game, and they said that they didn't know what was going on, but they were just enjoying the game a lot more than they were otherwise. And so they were sold. They put in the critical hits. And now, of course, the game has, you know, you can tell when you get criticals, and he gets, like, tons of they apparently get lots of people saying they absolutely hate it because they got criticaled against and they shouldn't have lost or whatever, but they also understand now the flip side of it was that there's something intangible which is going on which people really respond positively to.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, maybe they should have just kept them secret.
Yeah, thanks for blowing the lid off that deal there, Richard.
They advertise that when you play
now with enhanced critical hits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one thing we should make clear is that the amount of luck in a game and the amount of skill, that's not a zero-sum game. You can have a game
Sure.
with a huge amount of skill in it, but also a huge amount of randomness. One sort of fake or toy game that we like to use as an example of this is Rando Chess, where we play a game of chess, and then in the end we roll a die, and on a one, the loser wins that game of chess. Now, this game may not be played very much, but
it's got a catchy name.
It does. Rando Chess is a great name, and we've not yet trademarked that.
Yeah.
Is the URL still available?
Probably. But by the time we finish this podcast, it may not be. And the interesting thing about that game when you think about it is, sure, I can play the best chess player in the world and have a 1 in 6 chance of winning, but if that were the actual game of chess, the rank ordering of all the people that play chess would be the same. They may have to play a few more games before the outcome is determined, but the best chess player in the world would still be the best chess player in the world. So the on all of the skill that he uses, all of the amount of studying that people have to do, they would still have to do, and they would still do it. And although it would take them, like I said, a little bit longer to get the exact ordering down, the exact ordering would be the same.
Even
all of your skills would apply.
Yeah, even I mean, certainly there are a lot of people who are in games professionally who equate. It's a very natural thing to do. And it's very deep in our sort of gaming culture that luck is the opposite of skill, but it just is not. And this game really demonstrates it well that there is for just as much skill in some intuitive sense in rando chess as there is in chess, and there's obviously more luck.
So that's the sort of thing where, you know, that's a great game to shoot for, where you can, when it's played seriously by people, you can have the fine differentiation and skill. And yet, you know, the worst person in the world has a 1 in 6 chance of beating the best person in the world. And that's actually not incredibly dissimilar for where poker actually is. It's a little more obscured and thus better than rando chess, which I don't think is going to take the world by storm anytime soon. But that's something really interesting to shoot for in game design. You lose, obviously, efficiency in determining the rank order of people in the world.
But
that's something
the game's supposed to be fun, so it should be fun for them playing the extra time in order to determine that order.
Are there other games that do this? I mean, you had mentioned family games. Like, do you think that Monopoly, where does Monopoly fall? Where does Life fall? Where do these games fall?
Well, Life certainly has a huge amount of luck, no matter what life you're talking about. And Monopoly is kind of in a peculiar area because it has a large amount of skill a huge amount of skill in trading and a fair amount of skill in where you're going to allocate your resources. But then the way people typically play it, typically when you play with a family, they're not going to do some things which you might otherwise expect to see if they were playing it like cutthroat, where you two people would agree not to trade with a third person at all, and thus mm-hmm. each have a 50% chance of winning. Which would is one possible way that a high skill would express itself, but it isn't expressed because of unwritten rules in the game.
Right. So yeah, Monopoly's an unusual situation, hard to determine situation. But so the good things. I mean, so that's one good thing that luck does is allow more, it increases essentially the amount of people that can play with each other. That's a huge thing. But it does other things as well. One really good thing it does is it keeps the game varied.
Right. This won't always happen, but it is something which can. Luck is an excellent tool for making it so your game has both variation in setup and in the way the game plays itself out.
Which is adds replayability.
It can add a lot of replayability, and that's another reason why when I'm confronted with a game, I look for the sources of randomness in the game. And in a lot of these games, I look at it and there's just not much. It's like when we were talking about Small World, for instance, there's not all that much luck in there's a lot of luck in the way the game's set up, but during your turns, there's not much luck, which means that it could be a very fine game, but there's a very good chance it's going to play out very similar once your group gets good.
Talk a little bit about games you've designed or Magic in particular. How does that factor in?
Well, Magic in particular has it also hits on the third really good thing that luck does for you. So it's really people get so confused when they're confronted with overt randomness in games. And so Magic's a great example. When you play Magic, when you lose, it's because you got screwed from being unlucky, and when you win, it's because you outplayed the person. And so this is a great thing about a lot of the gambling games, where
the psychology of it,
people are really able to use it as a rose-colored lens to look at themselves and their play They just, it allows you to think of yourself as much better than you are. You can think of yourself as unlucky instead of unskillful. And that's when you lose.
I think I have poor self-esteem. I always go the other way. I attribute my wins to luck and my losses to being inept.
Yeah.
So thanks for making me feel better.
Yeah. Well, you're a realist.
I mean, Magic's got plenty of luck and plenty of skill. And in fact, very early on, Magic, of course, has a vibrant and long playing and active tournament scene with I don't know how many tournaments every week, and people play it very, very seriously. But when this thing was first being launched, there were a lot of players who didn't believe that it could really stand up to the sort of serious play which we were proposing. You know, that it would all come down to whatever, who just the luck of the draw and who put together the best deck. But the actual play of the game and what deck you choose to bring has an immense amount of skill, and it takes many times to play it to show this, but you get sort of a poker type of thing, and you see every one of these things. You got a vast variety of play introduced because of the luck, because when you finish playing a game of Magic, you want to immediately play again to see how it could turn out differently. You don't want to add new cards to the deck necessarily. You don't want to change things. You may even want to play against the same opponent. You probably want to play against the same opponent. Maybe you want to tweak things, but pretty much you want to play the same game again and again and again until you get a sense of how it's going to play out. And different tactics you can use. And then you start changing the card, or maybe alter the deck, or maybe play against somebody else. And this variation is allowed because of the luck in the game. If, for instance, you put your cards in front of you and each turn chose cards to play, and so it was a very much more deterministic game, then once you play it a few times, you really probably wouldn't want to play the same deck again as much. You would want to change the deck.
Excellent.
And you certainly see the crutch of I got unlucky.
That's bad beat constant. Stories all day long.
Yeah.
Mana screwed. I'm always mana screwed. It's amazing. I never draw a land.
The mana screw was actually a really interesting part of that story, because one of the reasons that the mana works the way it does is that we wanted to see this, that the very good player could occasionally lose, and one way to do that is to, you know, if they just don't get enough mana, right? You could make the game so that you've got a stack of mana on one side and you can draw whenever you liked or something like that, and many games have done that. And there's something to be said for that once you've got a sophisticated audience, and therefore they're automatically in this tighter band. But certainly at the beginning, where you've got a very broad audience, having it so that there's that variation in the game itself makes that was a swing we were looking for.
Yeah.
And sometimes you got mana hosed. Suck it up and play again.
One of my favorite stories along these lines
about the crutch.
The bad beat, right? The crutch. The crutch. The bad beat stories is when the hammer was playing Mark Justice. I think it was at Pro Tour 2. And he had I think the decks were drafted in the top 8, and he was in the finals, and he was playing, and toward the end of I think it was Justice. It might have been Preston Poulter, actually, that he was playing. It was probably Preston Poulter. And so he's playing he's playing toward the end, and I'm listening to Mark Rosewater and someone else, I forget who. Maybe it was Randy Bueller in the booth. There's no way it was
there's
Randy.
There's no way it was Randy Bueller.
Yeah, since he wasn't even playing then. But it was Mark and somebody else. Oh, it was Mark Justice and Mark Rosewater in the booth. Maybe that's who it was.
So who was playing?
I think it was Sean the Hammer Regnier and Preston Poulter.
Okay.
Anyway, it really doesn't matter. My memory is so bad. But I do remember this thing about how the hammer's deck was way worse, and he plays this whole game like extremely skillfully, and you know, there's only like 4 cards of value in his freaking entire deck, and then he's got like 6 cards left, and top decks, in quotes, an amazing card, and then top decks another card, and then top decks another card. And the announcers are just going crazy about how lucky he's been right. because he got all these cards in a row and then he wins and, you know, wow, how much luck is there in the game? And it was really disturbing, you know, from being a person outside the booth because he'd been getting totally screwed the whole game because he hadn't gotten any of his good cards until, you know, the very end. And he drew, you know, whatever, three of them in the last five cards, mm-hmm. and they happened to be in a row. Now, how you can possibly call that top decking, I have no idea. But it just showed you how you've got professional announcers and professional players and their take on the game is just completely skewed from reality because of the randomness involved in the game. And it was just great to, you know, to see them just react with, oh my gosh, I can't believe he drew that. Oh my gosh, I can't believe he drew that. And of course they have the deck list right in front of them. I mean, they know that all, you know, half the cards or more than half the cards of his last five draws are going to be amazing cards because he hadn't drawn them right. yet.
He got so lucky. His cards were in just about the worst place they could have been.
Yeah.
And then he got them.
Yeah.
The oftentimes analysis of games with some luck is much people do a much worse job of that than they do in games with low overt luck. It's the story where in poker they make a play and then they win some money and then they're hosed from then on out because they think it was a good play but it was a bad play, they just got lucky and they fool that, or they get super frustrated because they make the right move but they lose a few times and then they start changing their play, but they shouldn't do it, they should stick to it. It's just and poker is just about as simple mathematically as you could get, but it's still very hard to analyze.
The luck provides erroneous data points for players.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it shouldn't be erroneous, misinterpreted data points.
Well, the human mind is also very good at providing a narrative to those which doesn't necessarily follow any fact, right? It'll see patterns where there aren't patterns, and it will provide a story where there wasn't a story. The story is about you being hosed, but maybe that wasn't really the story. Maybe,
right?
You know, yeah. Well, maybe one of the best analogies is, you know, you always hear about these old radio broadcasts. Where, you know, there's some horror movie or something. Oh, I shouldn't say movie.
The chicken heart that ate San Francisco.
Or like the Orson Welles War of the Worlds broadcast, where when television first came on, you know, like Buck Rogers and like a Lone Ranger and a couple of these others were not viewed as well by the audience. Gosh, I can't even get away from these words. Were not appreciated as much by the audience because somehow it was better in their mind when it was on radio. The mind was able to construct, the visuals it needed to make it be a really good thing. And that alone is a really great thing that randomness can provide in your games.
Like right now, people listen to this podcast, envision us. They have a narrative probably about our relationships. They probably are thinking about, they probably have in their head what we look like if they don't know us, although pretty much everybody that listens to this does know us. And just for the record, no one is wearing pants. I'm just going to blow the theater of the mind right there and just say right out the front, no, there's no pants. It's a pants down podcast.
Yeah, I think that's how most people were picturing us anyway, right?
Yeah, the ladies.
I mean, you've just...
By the way, this one's for the ladies.
That's certainly how I picture people doing podcasts. Another luck story I don't know if you'll remember this, Gaff. I remember early on we had a bunch of different formats for Magic tournaments. One of the tournaments that fell by the wayside was sealed deck Magic, but we played it for a while. And I remember talking to one of the French players who said, I like the constructed and I like the draft, but sealed, too much luck. It's far too much luck. And I asked him then why France always did so poorly at it. and he had no answer.
That's funny.
Yeah, so now really now we've laid enough groundwork to go back to your question about casual games.
And what a great question it was, by the way.
Yeah, who knew? right? You just one line and bam, the can of worms gets opened.
And you post it so well.
It is one of the hallmarks of casual games that it's not quite as skill testing as a lot of games are, because it's got this system of it's got enough randomness in it where two things happen. One, a broader set of people can play even immediately against each other, but perhaps more important, you can play multiple games against the same person over and over again, and even as they're getting better or they decide they want to play it seriously and put more time into it, the game is still can still be fun for the person not putting time into it, and that's one of these things that makes the game casual. Is I am, because the rate at which the rate at which I'm going to lose to someone else is sort of slowed down in a way if they put in more work than I do.
Yeah, one-player games have a completely different set of values in many ways, because you don't need to worry about breadth of audience, right? You've got an audience of one. You don't have to find anybody to play. You can choose what level of difficulty you want to play against. Most single-player games also are built on exhaustible content. Like, you're expected to finish the game and move on. Some games try to get more than that. You know, the Bejeweled can be played an awful lot, and Solitaire can. But most, you finish it, and you want to get, whatever, Dino Dash 2 or something like that. That's not the way multiplayer games traditionally work. Multiplayer games traditionally are things you play for a lifetime. They just never get old. You can play backgammon or chess or poker as long as you like, dominoes, whatever. You can get dominoes too, but dominoes one will last you your whole life. So it's very different.
Right, but all the same rules still apply, especially sort of if you think of, you know, your score as the opponent or your previous self as the opponent. If there's enough randomness in the game, your outcomes over time will vary a lot more than if there's less randomness, and so you will be able to feel as though you're getting better, and you're improving yourself, or you've reached a new level of achievement because of the randomness in the game. That's helping your score outcome fluctuate a lot, which is really nice. Like, you can sit down and play Bejeweled and get a high score, and your skill cannot change at all. And you can play it again and again and again, and 3 times later, you get a new high score.
Right. For the rare single-player game that is trying to be and succeeding in being an infinite game, a game which has the replayability that traditional multiplayer games have, that's true. Many, you know, don't have that replayability, don't try to get it. And then in those, I could even see randomness in some ways working against it, like Lode Runner. Lode Runner was a very skill-testing game, and I think I would feel kind of gypped if I played this level, you know, 5 times, and it feels good to play it 5 times, get the aha, and then I finish that level rather than play it five times and get lucky.
The skill in Lode Runner, by the way, is endurance.
Yeah,
since you had to start back at the beginning.
What you're talking about is sort of what you're talking about is a puzzle in a sense, and
right. Well, most of them are puzzles.
Right, like the hidden object subcategory of casual games is huge, and that's just finding stuff in a mosaic on the screen, and so it is just a puzzle, but it's lumped in with casual games because it's a huge category. Like, they sell a lot of those mystery hidden object games, and there's no sense of randomness in that. Well,
right.
Sure,
well games which are built as exhaustible content,
right,
don't really need it. For single player games that don't aspire to be played replayable a lot, really don't need it, because you don't need to find an opponent, so you don't need the breadth of audience. The variance of play isn't something they're interested in because it's exhaustible. That's not something which is something I want to look for in a game, but that's a lot of people make them, and they're very popular. And one of the nice things is you can sell them again and again. And
I think the third thing still applies
crutch,
a little bit.
The crutch is probably still useful.
I tell you, I use the crutch when I try to do those damn Sudoku puzzles.
Well, right, and no, exactly. I mean, that's certainly how I can tell you. That's how some members of my family play. They won't listen to the podcast.
Because your kid's like three, right?
Yeah. No, I was talking about maybe a previous rather than successive generation.
Yeah. Very subtly done.
To summarize.
I'm a big fan of them. I was saying that their randomness in casual games is good. Skill testing in casual games tends to be bad. And randomness does a lot of great things that we talked about for multiplayer games. For single player games, you've got a little bit different things going on. It does help a wider range of people approach a single level of difficulty, and keeps variety in the single player games so that they're replayable. And helps you when you fail a single player challenge think that it might not be you, but instead randomness.
All right, that's one more in the books. On behalf of Scaff Elias.
Hello.
And Richard Garfield.
Goodbye.
Oh, yeah. I'm Tyler Bielman. This has been the Games with Garfield podcast.
You got to do that one more time.
And no, that works well.
Good night. Kicking the thing and it's making noise. I can edit
Dude,
all this out.
I understand,
out.
But you don't have to keep. I stopped it. You don't have to keep doing.
No, you
this
didn't
over
stop.
And
Your
over
foot
again.
Went right back to it.
It did.
It did. It
was, I did not.
You did. He was like a baby to the tit.
It.
Your foot went right back
not,
to it. And I thought I was gonna have to
it.
Slap you.
Didn't touch it. Didn't touch it. Anyway,
I can take all this out. It's fine.